Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're digging into a pretty hefty report from 2015. It's called the Western Cape Climate Change Mitigation Scenarios for the Energy Sector.
Right, a big modeling effort. It basically looked at the province's energy use and emissions, projecting out to 2040.
And it laid out around 100 different ways to, well, mitigate those emissions.
Exactly. And it set up this interesting challenge, really.
Mm-hmm.
How do you make the biggest cuts when the really big levers, like power generation, are mostly controlled at the national level?
Versus what the province can actually do directly, locally.
Precisely. That's the core tension explored in the report.
Okay, so let's unpack it. What was the starting point? The sort of do-nothing scenario.
Yeah, the reference case. It wasn't pretty. It projected about a 2.3% average increase in energy emissions every single year, all the way to 2040.
Oof. Okay, so the mission was clear.
Yeah.
Bend that curve way down. How close could they get?
Well, the best modeled outcome was what they called all possible measures, or APM.
Right.
And that was combined with significant fuel switching. So moving from coal and liquid fuels towards natural gas, mostly.
And what did that achieve?
It made a substantial difference. It brought that annual increase rate down from 2.3% to just 0.9%.
Okay, still an increase, but much, much slower.
Much slower. Overall, it represented something like a 34% reduction compared to doing nothing at all. So intervention definitely helps.
Now, if you're just looking at like the biggest chunk of potential savings, where did that come from?
Ah, that was clearly power generation, replacing coal plants. That single sector offered 31% of the total mitigation potential identified for the province.
And the main technologies there were?
The big hitters were onshore wind, natural gas combined cycle turbines, CCG2, and solar photovoltaics. Big supply side stuff.
It's interesting, you know, what wasn't favored in that category?
Good point. Things like nuclear power, for example. When they ran the numbers and the analysis, it just didn't score well.
Why was that?
Mostly implementation hurdles, the upfront costs, the time frames. Compared to deploying wind or gas, it just looked less favorable in their assessment.
Okay, so power gen offers the biggest potential cut.
Yeah.
But then the report takes this interesting turn, right? It starts looking beyond just raw carbon reduction.
Exactly. It brings in this multi-criteria analysis, the MCA, which tries to balance things like cost effectiveness, how easy something is to actually do, and the social and environmental co-benefits.
And this is where things get a bit counterintuitive.
Definitely. Because the measure that ranked number one overall in the MCA, it wasn't wind farms or gas plants.
So was it?
Shifting freight from road to rail.
Wait, moving boxes off trucks and onto trains. That was number one.
That was number one. Now, its actual emissions abatement potential was tiny, only like 0.6% of the total provincial potential. But it scored incredibly well on cost and social factors.
Huh. So the best action depends entirely on how you measure best.
Absolutely. And right behind freight rail at number two, shifting passengers from cars to public transport, another modal shift.
And things like solar water heaters also scored well.
Yeah, residential solar water heating was number five, commercial was number six. Things with clear local benefits and easier implementation.
Which leads us back to that core conflict, influence versus impact.
Right. Take industry. It's the biggest energy user, huge emissions footprint, offers about 22% of the total potential savings.
Well, yeah.
But the province only has about 28% influence over those industrial measures. Most levers are national policy or business decisions.
Whereas for buildings?
That's the flip side. Commercial buildings, residential buildings, even agriculture. Province and the municipalities have pretty much a 100% influence there.
Even though the total emission slice is smaller, like 13% for commercial, 10% residential, 6% agriculture.
Exactly. Smaller slice, but total control over implementing measures within it. Energy efficiency, solar water heaters, building codes.
So boiling it all down, what are the big strategic paths suggested here?
Well, path one is you go for the big supply side, wins the wind, the gas. Huge potential impact, but you're heavily reliant on national government action and approvals. It might take longer, face more obstacles.
Okay, path two.
Path two is you really lean into where you have that 100% local control. Buildings, some transport shifts, agriculture. You maximize your autonomy.
The carbon savings might be smaller for each individual action, but you can actually make them happen more quickly and reliably.
Precisely. You focus on immediate implementation, capturing those local benefits, cost savings for residents, improved air quality from transport shifts.
And what's really fascinating, I think, is where that local action is most concentrated.
Yeah, the building sector really stands out. Residential and commercial. That's where local government, provinces, and municipalities have the most direct power to act quickly and effectively.
So here's maybe the final thought to leave listeners with.
Go on.
If a province, or provinces generally, really double down on maximizing their impact in those areas where they have 100% control, like buildings, could demonstrating that kind of success, that tangible local progress, actually shift the national conversation? Could it build political will or even change how carbon budgets are allocated to unlock those bigger, nationally controlled energy projects down the line?
That's the really provocative question, isn't it? Does successful local action become the key that unlocks national ambition? It suggests local isn't just a sideshow, it could be the main strategic lever.